Okay, we're going to begin here at the top of Lamed Hey Amud Aleph. We're continuing with the Agadata regarding the Meraglim. So it says three lines down, Yisapro lo, v'yomru banu, uchtiv efes ki aza am, am Rabbi Yochanan mishum Rabbi Meir, kol lashona ra, chein bo debar emet, b'tchilato ein mitkayim b'sofo. Any lashona ra that's told that doesn't have some truth in the beginning will not uphold. I mean that in order to sway the people or encourage someone to listen to lashona ra or to listen to those lies, a person must begin with something that's truthful in order to capture them, and once it's captured them, then they can mention things that maybe aren't necessarily true. The question is, with regards to the Meraglim, what was it they said that was true, and what was not true in what they said? Because everything they did bring back, they brought back the fruits of the Aretz, and they said, this is Piriyah, that's all true. They went there to look at the land, and the Sukkim and Dvarim uphold what they said with regards to the strength of the people, and that the cities are walled, and that there are Nakim, that there are giants there. So what is it that they say that was truthful, and what did it say that it's not truthful? So the Marsha here points out that with regards to the fruits, what were the fruits that they brought back? They brought back the Rimon, the Te'ena, the Gefen, and they also had, they said it's Eretz Zavat Lavu Dvash, which is Vashel Tamarim. So out of the seven, the Shivat Aminim, they brought four of the Minim, and it said Zeh Haaretz Upriya, this is the fruit of the land. What were the fruits, what did they leave out? They left out Chitat Se'ora and the Shemen. And those are the three items that are found by the word Eretz in the Pasuk. And why is that? Because the Ikar Chiyutam Shel Adam, these are the major items that sustain the person, which are Chita Se'ora and Zeit Shemen. So their point in bringing back these four fruits, that Shenisabcha Be'em Eretz Yisrael, out of the seven, was to say that these were the fruits of Eretz Yisrael and not the major components of what a person needs to live of Chita Se'ora and Zeit Shemen. So the truth was they brought down the back back the fruits and the big fruits of Eretz Yisrael. The untruth that they were trying to promote or propose was that these four fruits were there and not the other three that Shenishtabcha and Behen Eretz Yisrael, those which were essential to living in Eretz Yisrael, which are Chitat Torah and Zeit Shemen, as we mentioned in yesterday's daf, that those are found in the Psukim that are found after the Parshat Meraglim, about Ki Yavo El Aretz, when you come to the land, when it comes to Chala, and when it comes to the Nisachim, that the Chitat Torah and the Shemen are found in those Psukim. In addition, they also told the truth with regards to the strength of the people that were there. So that was true, and whether they were living in walled cities and everything that they described about the difficulty in conquering the people or the enormity of those people in their cities was true. What was untrue about what they said, number one, is that we saw Bnei Anak. Number one, they did not, because they did not go to Hebron. The only one who went to Hebron was Kalev, as we saw in the Agadato. And therefore, when they said we saw Varino as Bnei Anak, they didn't see them, but Kalev had seen them, so that was one untruth. And the second truth was they said was that we will be unable to conquer them. That Shem will be unable to conquer them. So what they said was true about the strength of the people, as well as the cities that are walled, but the untruth that they spoke was that our inability to conquer them, or the fact that we saw the Bnei Anak, which only Kalev had seen and not them. So continuing along, Vayahas Kalev et Amel Moshe, right, the Kalev goes to silence the people towards Moshe. Amar Abba, he sitan varim, that he tricked them, that he swayed them with his words. Patach Yeshua de Kamishta, he armile dein rosh ktia yimalel. So Yeshua stood up to speak in order to defend the position of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or to say the truth with regards to Eretz Yisrael. And they said, this cut off head should speak. Right, so what does that mean, Rosh Ketiyah? Rashi brings down one interpretation, Rosh Ketiyah means that he didn't have any sons, and therefore he was considered cut off because he didn't have any sons. The other possibility, which the source of Shas brings down from the Aruch, that Rosh Ketiyah means that his name begins with a cut off letter, with a Yud, that Moshe had added on the letter Yud to his name, and his name now begins with this shortened letter, this small letter, Yud. And the Marsha says both of these explanations seem far-fetched, and he offers a third interpretation, which is that the Meraglim were saying to Yeshua, how are you different than us? I mean that we were all sent, right, by the Nisi'im of our Shvatim and through Moshe Rabbeinu, and that the Hosafat Yud, the Rosh Ketiyah, just because you had a Yud added to your name doesn't mean that you were sent with the permission or the encouragement of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore why should you have any right to speak, or what do you have to say that's different than what we have to say? So when Kalev sees what happens to Yeshua, and then he stands up and says, Amar imashtina inan armi be milta v'chasmin li. If I do the same thing that Yeshua does, they will stand up and they will silence me. Amalem b'chizu b'lvarat alanu ben Amram. Says, is this all that Moshe had done for us? So now they thought that he was going to continue to say all these negative things about Moshe. So yishtiku, they were silenced. So after he had gotten them silenced, meaning that he had the trick or swaying them to allow him to speak, was that he began with a position that seemed to be negative towards Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, is this all that Moshe has caused, the problems that he caused us, or the negative things that have happened to us? They thought it would be for the negative, and instead he said all these positive things with regards to Moshe. That Moshe took us out of Mitzrayim, that he supported the Yam for us, he gave us the man. If he told us to make ladders and climb to the Rakia, we wouldn't listen to him. Alon Aleph. So that's the diok from the pasuk. We think it's the Gemara saying Alon Aleph means we will go up. So this is the diok that even if he tells us to build ladders, we'll go up to Sibir Rational Town, we will succeed. And now we've seen the successes of Moshe Rabbeinu where we thought all hope was lost or where we thought it was impossible. Moshe Rabbeinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has always come through for us. And so too over here, Alon Aleph, the Rational Town. Vanashim Asher Lo Imo Amru Lo Nuchal. And the Meraglim that had gone with him said, no, we are unable to, we will not be able to conquer them. Amar Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa Dabar Gadol Dibru Amaglim Belto Shat. They spoke a great thing. Great not meaning big, but severity. In terms of severity, they said something that was very severe. Ki Chazak Hu Mimenu. Right, that he is, they are stronger than us. The word Mimenu. Now, a lot of people eliminate the next line in the Gemara because it doesn't necessarily make so much sense, which is Adikah Mimenu El Mimenu. Which is that the word does not change. And the drush of the Gemara here is that Ki Chazak Hu Mimenu means that they are stronger than us. Right, and the Mimenu can also refer to Mimeno, meaning that Hashem, they are stronger than Hashem. Hashem will be unable to conquer them. So Rashi points out here that it makes no difference in the Mikra between Mimenu for the plural and Mimenu for the singular. So the Al-Tikri would be inappropriate here, but Ki Chazaku Mimenu, the drasha is not Mimenu us, but rather Mimenu from Hashem. That even Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will be unable to remove the nations from there. So they were Kofer Be'ikar. Eretz Ochelet Yoshevehahi. So before we continue here, right, the point of the Meraglim, or the sin of the Meraglim, again, of course, is that they left from the Midbar in a place that was Kulo, that it was all spiritual. And they came to a place, they see Eretz Yisrael, and they see the Avodah, the work that must be done in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, the Meraglim believe that it's inappropriate, it would be wrong for Bnei Yisrael to leave such a spiritual environment, to leave the Beit Midrash, and to go out into the world, and to live a life al Kiddush Hashem. That would be either too hard, or was the wrong approach for Bnei Yisrael. And therefore, they bring back Dibat HaRa'ah, they bring down the negative approach, as the Netziv mentions this also, that they bring back in a negative report in order to maintain the spiritual status quo that Bnei Yisrael are enjoying in the Midbar, or because they feel that Bnei Yisrael are not strong enough to continue in the Midbar. So they thought they were L'shem Shemayim, but in the end, right, they are undermining that which is what Hashem wanted, the plan that Hashem had, and therefore they are, in some senses, Kofer B'Ikar, because they are denying Hashem's ability to bring them to the land and to have Bnei Yisrael sustained and live there al Kiddush Hashem. Now the pasuk continues over there that the Meraglim say it's Eretz Ochelet Yoshevehahi, that's a land that consumes its inhabitants. I thought I would do this for their benefit, and they ended up seeing it as a negative. Everywhere they went, somebody important, someone of stature would pass away. That the people would be occupied with the hespate and the bearing of these people, and they wouldn't notice the meraglim that are coming. And some say, what was that that passed away? What was the Iyov Nachnapshei? Iyov passed away, and everybody was involved in the hespate, meaning that Iyov was a quote-unquote gadol ador, an ish chashuv, and since he was an ish chashuv, right, then everybody was involved in hespate or saddened by his passing. And therefore, they would be preoccupied and wouldn't notice the meraglim. Heim chashvu the ra'ah, right? They thought it was better to chalad yoshevei, because they said that it was a land that consumes its inhabitants. Rather than seeing the positive, that they were preoccupied, and therefore they couldn't notice the meraglim, they saw this as a negative, that the land consumes its inhabitants. Unihi be'einenu kechagavim be'einayinu be'einahem. Right? We were in our eyes like grasshoppers, and so too were we in their eyes. These meraglim were liars. that we consider ourselves like grasshoppers, the chayei. Of course they could know that, because they were speaking about themselves. How did they know that others viewed them as grasshoppers? Right? How would they know this? So I heard from Rabbi David mention the name of Rav Soloveitchik, that right, this is that a person's sense of how others view him have to do with the way that he projects himself. If a person believes that he is a grasshopper, others will see him like a grasshopper. And therefore, when the Meraglim made such a statement, they said, right, we were like grasshoppers, and therefore they felt, or the others saw them like grasshoppers. But over here, the Gemara says, well, how did they know that? Meaning that, how could they make such a statement? It's not the case. Maybe they are not lying. When they used to put out the Sudas Havara for the Avelim, they used to place it out under the cedars. When they saw that they were coming out, they went into the trees. They heard the people there saying, we saw they would go and hide either among the trees or up in the trees, and the people who were making the Sudas Havara would say, oh, we see in the trees, we see grasshoppers that look like people. So they overheard others speaking about them and considering them like grasshoppers. But again, the push of pshat is the way the Rav Soloveitchik mentions over here, that the person's self-image, right, becomes the image that he believes others see about him, and also the way others do perceive him, that your self-image dictates the way others perceive you. But Yisakol David knew it Kolam Vayivku, so the Bnei Yisrael cry, and we have the famous line here, they cried unnecessarily, that this day will become a day of crying forever, the Dorot. And again, Tisha B'Av became a day of Avelus, on which the many bad things befell Bnei Israel. And it all started from this Bechia Chinam, this crying unnecessarily that happened in Midbar. That the Eidah wanted to stone the stone Yehoshua and Caleb and Moshe and Aaron with the stones. Chtiv Chod Hashem Nira Bo Moed, that the Chod Hashem appeared in the Moed. Amar Bechir Ba'av Moed Shnat Avanim Vizarkum Kalfei Malo. That when they came to stone them, they weren't just coming to stone the representatives of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but even once the Shekhinah appeared in the Moed, they were going to throw the stones. They were going to actually throw them against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then it says Vayemutu Anashim Otzei Dibat Art Ba'ah Be'Magifa. So those that went out, meaning the Meraglim, the ten Meraglim, passed away in a Magefa. So Amar Rav Shem ben Lakish Shemetu Mita Mishuna. They died in very unusual death. What does it mean that they died in unusual death? Amar Rechim Rav Papa Dash Rav Shila Ish Kfar Tamrata Leitchin Shishtarvev L'Shanam V'Nafal Ad Tiburam. That their tongues came out of their mouths and went down to their bellies, to their belly buttons. V'Yutalayim Yotzim L'Shanam. And they had worms or maggots coming out of their tongues, v'nichnasu b'tiburam, and going into their bellies, b'tiburam v'nichnasu b'lushonam, and out of their bellies into their tongues. V'rav Nachman Yisachemar ba'askro ameto, that they died from askro, some sort of choking disease. So how do we know that they died this mita mishunas? Tosu says because it says dibarat aretz ra'ah b'magefa, so that they are darshaning the pasuk of ra'ah b'magefa, that a very bad magefa or ra'ah b'magefa is what made it mita mishunas. That's what Tosa says. Rashi points out that also that b'magefa, when it says, it doesn't say b'magefa, but b'magefa, that they used a magefa miyuchedet. There was something unusual about their punishment, and their punishment was that it was midah kenegin midah. And same thing with askra, Rashi mentions that askra comes al lashon hara, that we mentioned in the Gemara and Shabbos, that askra is the punishment for lashon hara, and since they spoke lashon hara, they died b'askra. Now why they're lashonam and the tiburam? So Lishonam is obvious why their tongues were, because they spoke badly about Eretz Yisrael, so that was Mingya Kenegnida. Tiburam, what about their Tiburam? So we know, I think the Maharal mentions in his Chidushei Agadot, that Tiburam has to do with Eretz Yisrael as Tibur Haaretz, that Eretz Yisrael is considered to be the center or the belly of the world, and so therefore they spoke badly about Eretz Yisrael, and therefore their punishment was Lishonam and Tiburam, that their tongues for the Lashon Hara and Tiburam in a reference to Eretz Yisrael. Now, the Gemara had this sidebar now and goes back now to the crossing of the Yarden, the Gadat of the regards to the crossing of the Yarden. Chazru amayim limkomam. That after Bnei Yisrael leave the waters when they cross over the Yarden, the waters go back to their original state. Shenemar vayiba lo takonim noseron brit Hashem mitoch haYarden. Once they left the Yarden, nitkup haglot raglei akonim elach harava. Once the feet of the kohanim left to the dry land, vayishuba meYarden limkomam. That the waters of the Yarden go back to their place. And they ride, or the waters are going like the previous days on its banks. Now the Gemara says, "Nimta Aron nasav v'kohanim mitzad echad, Yisrael mitzad echad." That when the Aron left, they actually went to the eastern bank of the Yarden, and not to the western bank of the Yarden, where the rest of Klal Yisrael were found. Now the Pashut Peshat and the Pesukim in Yehoshua, the Pashut Peshat is that the Kohanim and the Aron go into the Yarden. The Yarden splits once they enter the Yarden. Then the people or Bnei Yisrael cross over the Yarden, and then the Aron comes out. Lifnei Ha'am comes out on the other side, before the people. The problem in the Perek in Yehoshua, in Perek Gimel, and Perek Dal in Yehoshua, is actually there seems to be a number of repetitions of the fact that the Kohanim went in and that the people crossed. And because of those repetitions, Rashi explains over here that the Gemara comes to Darshan, that because of those repetitions that the Kohanim actually did not go out on the western side of the Yarden, but rather they went out of the eastern side of the Yarden. And he says, Rashi says here, it's Ein Mukdam Umuchar Batorah. And that Ein Mukdam Umuchar Batorah also applies to Navi. And some of the psukim are out of order over here. So now, when it says that Vahi Kolam Atam Kolam Laborak, right after all the people left, then Nitzku Raglei Kohanim, the Kohanim pulled out their feet and went out. So when they pulled out their feet, Rashi says that not that they went out on the western side with the rest of the people, but rather they took a step back on the eastern bank of the Yarden, and then the waters went back. So now you have the Kohanim on the eastern side of the Yarden, and the Am on the western side of the Yarden. Now, Rashi in the Navi himself says that they learned it out because it does not say when it says when the Kohanim leave the Yarden, it does not say that they vayavru, that they went over to the other side, but rather that they vayamdu, that they took a step back, and because they took a step, vayamdu, when they stood and not vayavru, that it teaches us that they did not cross, but rather took a step back onto the eastern bank of the Yarden. Again, it's not Pashut Peshat and Pesukim. But the drasha from the extraneous, or the number of times that it repeats, the fact that Bnei Yisrael crossed over, as well as the Aron crossing over, and because of that, the Chazal darshan that the people went to the western bank, and the Kohanim, once they had gone into the Yarden to have it split, when they stepped out of the Yarden, they stepped back to the eastern bank of the Yarden, and the waters are now crossing. Now you have the Aron and the Kohanim on the eastern side, and the people on the western side. So what happens? So Nimsa Aron Nosav Kohanim Mitzarechav, Yisrael Mitzarechav, Nasa Aron et Nosav Ba'avar. The Aron crosses over the water and brings the Kohanim that are holding it along with it. Shnemar vayhi kasher tam kol ha'am la'avor. After all the people went, vayavor Aron Hashem Kohanim lifnei ha'am. That the Aron Hashem, the Kohanim, go before the people. What does it mean that they went in front, or they crossed in front of the people? It means that they watched while they crossed over the water. All the people saw the Aron and the Kohanim going. Even though the pashpashat again would be that vayavor Aron Hashem Kohanim lifnei ha'am is that they walked across the Yarden. And they came out in front of the but nevertheless, the Gemara says, because of the new other psukim that are found there, that this is extraneous, and since it's extraneous, they darshan it that, no, that the waters are already closed, and that when they crossed over, it's the Aron crossing over with the Kohanim. But Darvazen and Ash Uzzah, when they are bringing the Aron up, David is bringing up the Aron, this is with a punishment that Uzzah got, Shnemar Vayavo Ad Goran Kidon, that they reached until Goran Vayashach Uzzah Yadoda Chosat Aron, and that Uzzah sticks out his hand to grab the Aron, right, because what the wagon that the Aron was on had stopped, and it looked like the Aron was going to fall, so he reached out to grab the Aron. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Uza Nosav Nasa Atzmo Lo Koshkein. Kadosh Baruch Hu says about Uza, the Aron can carry those that carry it. It can't carry itself. What are you afraid over here? Vayicharav Hashem BeUza VeYakehu Sham Al Hashal. So that the Hashem got angry at Uza, and he kills him there, knocks him there. Al Hashal. What's Al Hashal? What is the word shalah or shaleh? Means to fake out, either to fake out or to tell untruths or to slip up. So Rabbi Yochanan Rav Elazar Chad Amar Iskei Shalu. One of them says Iskei Shalu, but Chad Amar Shasat Rakav Bifanav. So Iskei Shalu would be interpreted the word shalu to mean on the mistake. Shalu is that shigagah, that he made a mistake and he went to grab for the Aron. Since he went to grab for the Aron, that's where he died. Chad Amar Shasat Rakav Bifanav, that he urinated or he went to the bathroom in front of the Aron. That shalu or shaleh means that he acted inappropriately. Ki shal, Rashi brings the pasuk, shal shal tzuchav kol lashon, ki shal zeitecha, that it will slip away. or shel yata, that something that goes from down up to down, I mean that falls away, something that goes away. So over here he was relieving himself by their own, which was inappropriate. But yamacham im aron elokim, that he dies there next to the aron elokim. Uzam Rabbi Yochanan Uza ba olam haba. Uza comes to olam haba based on that. Shneimar im aron elokim says that he went along with the aron elokim. Maron the olam haba kayam apuza ba the olam haba. Just like the Aron goes to, is always extant, is always existing because it was put into Geniza, Afuza Ba'olama. So to Uzah goes to Olam Haba. So according to the first interpretation that he made a mistake, doesn't seem to mean necessary that he went to Olam Haba, because if he makes a mistake, he should go to Olam Haba. But rather, it seems to me that this is a response to the second interpretation that says that he asah, she'asah trachav, that he acted inappropriately for the Aron. So despite the fact that he acted inappropriately by the Aron, he still is a Ben Olam Haba, because there's a hekesh between Uzzah and the Aron Elohim. V'yichal David al Asher Paratz Hashem Paratz B'Uzzah. So David is angry at Hashem because he did something, he had hurt Uzzah in the middle of the celebration of bringing up the Aron. Amalazar Shishtanu Panab Kicharara, that David's face turned black, like a loaf of bread that you place into the oven, that is like a coal or like hardens in the oven, turns black. So, you're going to say every time that the pasuk uses the term "vayichar," that's also what it means. The Gemara says, no, "hakalok tiv af." Right? It has to do with when you have the term "af" used and when the term "not af" is used. So, "vayichar" over here does not, "vayichar" the David does not have the term "af" used over there, and that's why "nishtanu panav kecharura." Whereas normally, Vayichar Af is the terminology that's used. And the lack of the term Af here means that what makes the additional anger or the description of how David got upset. So the Torah says, why was David punished with the death of Uzzah? Because he called Divrei Torah as Mirot. He turned them into songs. Shenemach, Mirut hayu li chukecha beveit megurai. So that in Tehillim, David says that your chukim, your Torah, was for me like a song when I was traveling around, when I was being chased by my enemies. I'm like, when you talk about that if your eyes flight away, meaning that if you leave them for a second, they will not be with you, meaning that you have to be shakud, and you have to be matmid behem, and you're talking to Atakoran with some zmiros, you call them a song. I'll cause you an accident, something to happen, that even the simple children know, that learn in the cheder know, that will be a mistake that you have. So now the Marsha points out over here, what's the problem with calling Divrei Torah as Mirot? Because Mirot, or song, is something that is temporary, something that goes into the head of a person and it reverberates for a time with a person, but afterwards it leaves, the song doesn't always stick there. Whereas when we're talking about Divrei Torah, we're talking about something that has permanence, something that must always be there, and it's not simply a passing item or a passing fad, but rather something that is permanent. So therefore it's Mirot, was the inappropriate term to be used for Torah. Now it says, what was it that everybody, so Petra and Ban Yodin, so the assumption is that all the kids that are in Cheder know the Torah, they know Chamishe Chumshe Torah. And what does it write in Chamishe Torah? It says in the Parshat Naso, when the gift of the Agalim, Agalot, from the Nisim, it says, Ibn Katlo Natan, Moshe does not give them any of the wagons, give without the Kodesh, because if he so, that they had to carry by shoulders. I mean, that everybody knows that you don't take it on a wagon, that you don't take the Aron on a wagon. And yet, David, when they're bringing the Aron up, brings it up in a wagon. And he brought it up in a wagon. But it says that the Aron kills and among the people of Beit Shemesh. The Gemara says, what? Just because they looked at the Aron that they died? Right? They went on with their work. When the Aron shows up, they continue to do their work, despite the fact that the Aron shows up. And that Rashi points out, they did not stop working in order to bow down appropriately towards the Aron, but rather continue their work and just bowed their heads towards it. That they also said something that was inappropriate with regards to the Aron, right? They said, man, Amrech dim right, man at alayech tifasait. Right, who told you? Who upset you? Right, when the Plishtim came and conquered Shiloh, who upset you or got you angry that you did not save yourself at that time from the being taken by the Plishtim? And now, who's going to console you when you return? I mean that You didn't take care of the Aron. You didn't take care of yourself when you were put into Galut, right? And so too over here, why do you want anybody to get upset or excited for you when you return? They either spoke inappropriately or they acted inappropriately, meaning that they did not, when they looked at the Aron, they looked at it out of Kalus Rosh. They looked at it without any consideration for the Dushat Ha'aron. They should have stopped their work. They should have bowed down fully. They should have been Gilu Birada. And it's okay to be excited. It's okay to be happy about the return of the Aron. But that happening has to come in Gilu Birada. It has to come in the context of Ra'ada in talks of Yirat Hashem. But they didn't have that Ra'ada. They simply continued their work. They continued their daily living and just kind of bowed down to it and let it stay there. So their inappropriate behavior towards the Aron is what caused them to die. So it says over there, Vayach Ba'am Shivim Ish V'chamishim Elef Ish. So it says that it killed in the Am 70 people V'chamishim Elef Ish and 50,000 people. So it should have just said, right, as one thing, 70 and 5,000 Ish. But the fact that it separates the two, the Gemara is going to dash in. Rebbe Rabbi Elazar Chadamar Shivim Ish Hayu. There were 70 people V'chalechad Chad Shakuk V'chamishim Elef, and each one of them was equivalent to 50,000 people. No, there really were 50,000 people. Each one of them was lured, or the equivalent of 70, like the Sanhedrin. Says that every time that they would move the Aron 6 steps, they used to bring a karbanot. And it says, Shiva Parim in Divrei Yamim. That's what's written in Shmuel. In Divrei Yamim, it says, Shiva Parim and Shiva Eilim. It doesn't just say Shor Mari, but it says 7 Parim and 7 Elim each time. Tamara Papa Bar Shmuel, how does you reconcile this? Al Kol Psiyah Psiyah Shor Mari. Each step they brought a Shor Mari. Al Kol Shesh V'Shesh Psiyot, and each Seder of 6 Psiyot Shiva Parim Mishiva Elim. Then they used to bring 7. So if you had, in each cycle, they would bring a 7 Parim and 7 Elim, but on each step they also bring a Shor Mari. Amalei Rav Chistim came related to Kol Eretz Yisrael Bamot. In that case, you have made Israel full of bamot, meaning that they were bringing excess karbanot. It's not clear to me what the criticism of Rav Chista here is of the position of Rav Papa. Well, this was during the period of time when there was heter bamot, number one, so it wasn't inappropriate that they brought karbanot. And number two is, and what's the problem with the fact that they brought karbanot all along the way? I mean, is it just a quantitative issue? I mean, is it just too much or too many karbanot? Or is there actually a problem mitzad kedusha, mitzad halacha over here? So Elam Rav Chizr, explains al kol shesh v'shesh psiot shor mri'i. Rather, on each 6 steps they brought a shor mri'i, al kol shisha starim. In each cycle of 6 of those 6 steps, shal shesh psiot shiva parim v'shiva ilim. That would be much more, meaning that every 6 steps they bring a shor mri'i, and then on cycles of 6 of those 6 cycles they bring shiva ilim and shiva parim, which would be less karbanot and less bamot. Ktiv, it says, Kidon in Divrei Yamim. In Ktiv, Nachon, it says, in Shmuel. So with regards to where they bring the Aron, by Yavoad Goren Kidon, right? And this is where the problem with the Uzzah takes place. And yet, in one place, in Divrei Yamim, it calls it Kidon, and yet in Shmuel, it calls it Nachon. Amar Yochum, it's Chila Kidon, Ulusof Nachon. In the beginning, Kidon is a negative term. Meaning that's cutting off or destroying. And the first it was destructive, meaning that it hurt Uzzah was killed there. In the end, it turns out Nachon because it stays in the right. It stays in the house for 6 months in Beit Oved Edom. And once it stays in the house of Beit Oved Edom, right, then it becomes Nachon, meaning that if he does good things for his house, and that's where it says Vayirach Hashem et Oved Edom. That Hashem blesses Oved Edom, and his wife and his daughters and daughters-in-law have many children. And that's when David sees the bracha of Edom and tries to bring, then comes back to bring it up to up to Yerushalayim. So that's where at first it was Kidon, it was negative, it was cutting off, it killed Uzzah. And in the Nachon, it ends up being a bracha for the house of Edom. The other possibility, Rashi brings a second interpretation over here of Kidon and Nachon, that at first it was Nachon, meaning that at first it was, this is talking about the Goren Arnona Yivusi, that's what it's referring to. And then, what it means, they have to change the girsa, that first it was Nachon, and then afterwards it was Kidon. That meaning, in the beginning, that it was Banui, that there they built the Mizbeach, and the end, that's where the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. So it's called Nachon and Kidon, but it refers to Goren Arnona Yivusi, that's eventually where the Aron ends up, when the Mikdash is built, where David buys the land and Shlomo builds the Beit HaMikdash. So beginning it was Goren Nachon, because in the beginning the Mizbeach stood and the Mikdash stood, and in the end it was Goren Kidon, because there the Mikdash was destroyed. Right, so now we just did that sidebar again. We had dealt with the Yarden and crossing that the Aron Osein Osav, that the Aron carries its people, and we went on to a sidetrack with regards to Uzzah, the punishment of Uzzah and David about carrying the Aron and bringing it up in a wagon. Now the Gemara is going back to the crossing of the Yarden. So when they cross over the Yarden, the Pasuk says that they have to pick up rocks, that Yeshua mitzaveh the Shvatim, 12 of the people, to go in there and pick up rocks. There were three times or three piles of stones that were put together. One was a pile or a masiva that Moshe puts together in Eretz Moab, in Eber Yadayin, Shnemar, Be'Eber Yadayin, Be'Eretz Moab, Ho'il Moshe Be'Eretz Atrazot. And it says, with regards to Yeshua, it says, by what they have to do when they cross over into Eretz Yisrael, by Har Gizim and Har Ebal, it says over there, Chabdad Alayim, it's called Dibre Atrazot. Rajya Be'er Be'er. Now we have a hekesh or a gzer shabav, the word be'er, in each of these two locations, just like the be'er that's found by Yeshua, is that they took the stones and they set up a masiva and they wrote the Torah. So too by Moshe in Arvot Moab, in the Eber Yarden HaMizrach, on the eastern side of Mizrach, and of the Yarden, he also does a similar thing. Ve'chad shekim Yoshua b'tocha Yarden, so one that a masiva that Yoshua puts in the Yarden itself, shnero shnemes rabbanim hekim Yoshua b'tocha Yarden, Yoshua puts up 12 stones in the Yarden, in order to be a siman to Klal Yisrael that Hashem split the Yarden over there. Ve'chad shekim b'Gilgal. So the other pile of stones that they took, they actually took Moshua says mitzaveh the 12 shiftei or 12 nesiim to go in and take 12 stones from Ben Ragleak on him, and then they carry those up to Har Gizim and Har Eval, and then after that they move them over to the Gilgal. They placed in the malon, that the place that they stayed or they camped, and that was in the Gilgal. So you have these three piles of stones, the Marsha points over here. These have to do, these represent the three fundamentals of Judaism. One fundamental that we have Torah and Torah mi Sinai, or Torah mi Akodesh Baruch Hu, Torah mi Hashem. That's Hashem's connection with us. Number two is that Hashem is Manhiga Olam, that He's able to change and move along the Olam. And the third thing is that but there is Schar Ba'onesh. So these three piles each represent. The pile of Moshe in Arvot Moab represents the Torah Min HaShemayim, that Torah is from Hashem, and that we have the connection to Hashem through the Torah. The idea that Hashem is Manhiga Olam is the pile that's in the Yarden, because here they stop the waters of the Yarden, and you can see that Hashem is Manhiga Olam. And the Schar Ba'onesh has to do with the stones that are brought to Har Gizim and Har Eval, where they have the Arur and the Baruch, which deals with Mekayim the Torah, that there's Schar and Onesh for those mitzvot. So these were what these three piles represented. Alright, Tarabanu, Ketzikot Bu'ichal to Torah. Had it been Yisrael, write down the Torah. Right, because it says that they, Alavanim, it's called Divrei, it says that you have to write on these, stones the Torah. So, Behuda Me'al Gabi Avanim Katfu, they wrote it on the stones themselves. Shenever, Bakata, Kavtavta, Alavanim, it's called Divrei Torah Zot. That you write all of this Torah on these stones. Barakar Kach, Sadu Oto Besid. And then afterwards, they place lime on top of it. How could the other nations come along and learn Torah? The whole point of writing down the Torah in Shivim Lashon over here was that the other nations should also be exposed to the Torah. If they wrote down the stones and then covered it with seed and covered it with lime, then how did they get access to the Torah? Hashem gave them a greater understanding, or people could understand it. Vishigru no tirin, the Shalahem, they sent over their copiers or their scribes, Gilfu et Hasid, and they peeled back the lime, Misua, and then they copied it down. Once they copied it down, they then took it back to the nations. Now the Bereshachad, from this, the nations were punishment, the Bereshachad, Shalem Lalameid, Velolimdu, that they should have, or Lumod, Velolimdu, that they did not learn, means that they had the opportunity now, access to the Torah, and since they had access to the Torah, they should have followed it, and the fact that they did not follow it is what was the Nechtam Gezar Dinah. So Tosfos asks, of course, Vim Tomar, Tipaklei, Dibshat Matan Torah, Zira Koshbukul Mavalashon, that Hashem already had taken it around to them, right? That they had given them the opportunity at the time of Har Sinai. What do you mean over here they had another opportunity? So Mar says, the Yishlomar Donor Zegadohu, that the Tosfos says, now this is even a greater sin, because over there Hashem just mentioned to them what was in the Torah. Over here they actually copied it down, and they had written copies of the Torah. With written copies of the Torah, they should have had easy access to it, and they should have been able to keep the Torah. And the fact that they didn't, right, already makes them deserving of a greater punishment. So now, the Rabbi Shimon Omer Gabei Sid Katvua, no, they wrote it on top. They put the stones, then they put the lime on top of it, or the sin on top of it. And they wrote it. They wrote it on the sid, because it says, right? So that they wrote on the bottom of the Mizbeach that you should learn from this, that you should learn everything that you need to do. That had they come back and done tshuva at this point in time, that they would have accepted them in, or mekabelim them with the tshuva, or they accepted them into Bnei Yisrael, they could have been gerim at the time. So two questions. One is that the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that you're not allowed to teach a goy Torah, and over here it says that the Torah was specifically written down in order for that the other nations should have access to the Torah. The distinction you must draw over here is the difference between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebe'alpeh. With regards to Torah Shebichtav, that's what's mentioned in this psukim over here, that Torah Shebichtav is nitan reshus b'ayim, it's been nitan to be written down, and it's written down for them to access and to learn it. When it comes to Torah Shebe'alpeh, that's the restriction in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that one may not teach a goy Torah, that has to do with Torah Shebe'alpeh, that's mentioned in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The second thing that we have to deal with is that there's a requirement of lo techayek on neshama when it comes to coming into the Shiva Amim, coming into the seven nations. Once you come into Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to let any of them live. There was no accepting them b'tshuva. There was no access to them to be chozer b'tshuva. So what are we talking about over here when it says, had they written the Torah, had they learnt the Torah and taken heed from what was written in the Torah, that they actually could have been chozer b'tshuva and we would have been called them as gerim. The Rashi over here explains that this has to do with the Shiva Umot that live outside of Eretz Yisrael. That any of the Shiva Umot that live inside of Eretz Yisrael, they are under the policy of lo techayek kol neshama. They have to be killed out. They have to be exterminated or eliminated. Whereas it comes to any of the Shiva Amim that are found outside of Eretz Yisrael, when they're found outside of Eretz Yisrael, there they can be chozer b'tshuva. There they nitan reshus. Had they kept the Torah and come to be megayer, we would have accepted them. So now Tosfos spends more time on this and says, well, what are you going to do with Rachav? Right there, the Meraglim made a promise to Rachav that they'd keep her alive. How could they keep her alive? She was part of the Shiva Amamim that's found inside of Eretz Yisrael. So now Tosfos comes up, mentions Rashi's interpretation, mentions the point that Rashi makes that we're talking about the difference between Shiva Ummot versus inside of Eretz Yisrael versus Shiva Ummot or outside of Eretz Yisrael. But he says that doesn't help you by Rachav. So what did he suggest? That the requirements of lo techayek kol neshama only begins once the battles begin, once the war begins. Once there's a war, once the battles begin inside of Eretz Yisrael, then there's no accepting of the people. But before the battles begin, before the war begins, right, before Bnei Yisrael cross into Eber HaYarden, at that point in time, the Shiva Umot had the opportunity to be Megayer. If they were Megayer at that time, we would have accepted them. But once the battles begin, once the Mechama begins, that opportunity is taken away. And because of that, that's why Rachav was kept, because, or allowed to be Megayer, and then later on, as Gemara Megillah mentions, to marry Yoshua, because she was prior to them coming in to do Milchama. Now, the Marsha says he doesn't think you need this explanation. He says that that's just a promise, that even though, right, like by the Givonim came and faked out Bnei Yisrael with regards to Yoshua, and they make a treaty with them, and we have to keep them alive. Even though there's a requirement of Lo Techayek Kol Neshama, if you make a promise, you got to keep the promise. And here the Meraglim had, because of Bikuach Nefesh, made a promise to Rachav HaZonah, and they had to keep that promise. Although I don't know if that solved the problem why they left her alive, why Yoshua marries her in the end. I think that is a greater issue, and that's what Tosfos, I think, is trying to address over here. And those nations that are found in the seven Umot, we do not let them convert. Rashi mentions over here why. The only reason that they are converting at this point, the only reason they're giving in, is because they're afraid of being conquered or killed by Bnei Yisrael. And we don't want Gerim that are coming Mi'ira because of the fear of the death, but we want them coming Mi'ahava that they want to join Klal Yisrael. And therefore, by definition, once the Shiva Umos are found inside of Eretz Yisrael, they're going to be converting only Mi'ira and not Mi'ahava. Right now, the Gemara continues. Alright, so Amar Abba Bar Shilat, my time is Rabbi Shimon. What's the reasoning of Rabbi Shimon? Dechtiv, Ayu Amim Masrifod Sid, Al Iskei Sid. Says what? The nations will be burnt up like lime, or like a pot of lime. All this case sid, right? They will be killed for the iske sid because he had them. They peeled away the sid according to Rabbi Shimon in order to read the. The Torah was written on the sid, and because of that, that's why they were killed. Right? Rabbi Yehuda ki sid masid in lo takana osrefa apota kutim in lahem takana osrefa. He says no. The sid. What does it mean that on iske sid? Iske sid is just like lime has no fixing except by burning it, meaning so to or heating it up. Also, the kudim, they have no takana srifa. Come on, Azla Hadatanya. Who does this go like the Braisa? Bishabita Shivyo. When we're talking about Eshetifat Toar, that in a Mechemet Rishus, you're allowed to take a captive. Rabot Knanim Shibachutzlar, that it refers to Knanim that are found outside of Eretz Yisrael. Shim Chozim Tshuva Mekamlim Otam. If they do Tshuva, we accept them. Come on, Kerabi Shimon. That sounds like Rabbi Shimon, who mentioned over here that Chazara b'tshuva, if they did tshuva, we would have accepted them. Who were we talking about when we were talking about Chozer b'tshuva? We were talking about those Knanim that are found outside of Eretz Yisrael. So now, Tosfos says over here, right, why can't Rabbi Yehuda agree by Yafar Torah? Right, because the Lo Dibra Torah connected Yetzer Hara. When we talk about Yafar Torah, the Torah is only speaking connected Yetzer Hara. Speaking about negative Yetzer Hara, maybe there's special permission for a Knani to convert in order to be a Yafar Torah. So Tosfos points out over here that that would not be the case. Because if you are under the requirement of Lo Techayen Kol Nishama, that there are no exceptions. There's no exceptions for the Yetzer Hara. That Lo Techayen is a overarching or overriding principle, and therefore you could not say that Yetzer Hara. According to Rabbi Shimon, who specifically excludes those that are outside of Eretz Yisrael, therefore there's a parsha of Yafat Tawar. But if it was inside of Eretz Yisrael, even Rabbi Shimon would agree that there's no parsha of Yafat Tawar inside of Eretz Yisrael because they're under the principle or under the requirement of Lo Techayen Kol Nishama. And therefore, the Gemara believes here that this Mechemes Rishus, an idea that a Yifat Tawar can convert, because there are even the Yeshiva Umos that are outside of Eretz Yisrael, as according to Shimon's position, who believes that Knanim, or those of the Yeshiva Umos that are outside of Eretz Yisrael, can be Chozer B'Tshuva. Okay, we'll stop here.